Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Van Lawrence. Who said that? That was Cole Hornaday.
That's me. Hello.
All right. We also have Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And, of course, Chris Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody today?
Spiffy.
Spiffy.
Yes. How are you, Nicole?
Oh, I'm so fresh and so clean.
I love your sweet smile.
I'm sparkly.
Yeah.
I dazzle.
Really?
I do.
I'm blind.
Don't look at me.
Don't smile at me.
Okay, so...
you can tell this is the last recording of the night.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how
I'm a Punchosaurus Rex.
Quickly kind of goes downhill.
But a fun downhill slide.
It is a fun downhill. It's yeah. Okay, like so our first topic today is going to be religion and comics, and I think one of the reasons why I put this in here is I have no idea why I put this in here.
I was wondering.
That's a reason.
I don't either. But
that's a reason. I'm like, I'm looking for topics. It was actually on the show sheet for like the last series of episodes we did, but something else came along and pushed it out of the way. But let's talk about it because I think it's interesting. I actually don't know if there are comic books that deal with religion.
Absolutely.
Sometimes in certain elements of pop culture, religion has a bad rap. You know, and so let's look at comics that actually we're going to be looking at the bad rap side soon enough. But let's talk about comics that actually treat religion piously. They have characters
sincerely.
Who are sincerely exactly.
Right. Well, back in the 80s, I remember Marvel put out a series of one shots. There was one devoted to St. Francis.
Yeah, St. Francis.
And there was one devoted to the Pope.
And then there was the one for.
Mother Teresa one.
Mother Teresa, yeah.
That's right.
Which
that's
the weirdest thing was, and this sounds just morbid, when she passed away, that became like a $100 book, and so did the Pope one. It's just like, this is weird.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Was never really certain what their motivating force behind publishing those was, but they were very successful books. They were probably trying to draw in the non-comic book reading audience, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But those books are actually taken really seriously.
So like there's two that come to mind for me particularly, and Cole had mentioned one before we recorded, and it's the Golden Plates.
Right.
And those were done by Mike Allward.
Mike Allward. There's three volumes, and they started in 2004, and I think they came out each year thereafter. And they were pretty successful in the Mormon community. I know I've never read them. I've always been a supporter of Mike Allred, but it was not something I was really interested in learning about. However, he went through this really interesting creative burst back in that time period where he incorporated a lot of his faith structures into the stories he was telling, especially like with Red Rocket 7. And Red Rocket 7 was a seven-part miniseries, seven-part out of Dark Horse. But it was also tied into a film that he produced, wrote, and starred in called Astroesque. And then there was also a soundtrack by his band. And the name of the band, Gear was the name of the band. And Astroesque is it's an independent, low-budget film that he shot and produced in Oregon, in and around Eugene. And it has, if you've ever seen Nicholas Roeg's The Man Who Fell to Earth, starring the late lamented David Bowie, it has that very much that feel about it. And in it, Mike takes the opportunity to talk about how so many faiths, because he's supposed to be an alien who comes to Earth and he lands in the dunes on the Oregon coast. So it looks very much like the opening sequence of The Man Who Fell to Earth. But he talks a bit about how faith structures are very similar at their core throughout all of the universe. And why does that not speak to a divine consciousness that interconnects us all, which I thought was really lovely. And that's, I think, if I recall correctly, those threads are in Red Rocket 7 as well.
It's been so long since I read any of those.
I just remember all the David Bowie imagery.
See, I did attempt the Golden Plates.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not. they were boring, so boring. I'm just not into religious text, and that particularly. He's a good craftsman.
Yeah,
and he was passionate.
Absolutely.
I fell asleep. So that was one I thought it was definitely worth us talking about and mentioning. The other one, though, that is very interesting was Genesis, which was released many years back. And that was by Robert Crumb of the underground scene. And it's a beautiful book. And if you ever see Robert Crumb artwork, beautiful is a difficult word to associate with.
Easily applied.
Yeah, a very smutty is what he usually can, you know, and like these edgy lines and very kinetic, but like fevered and just like sexual and all that. Mm-hmm. So he did Genesis, and he did it like totally like word for word and drew everything in like with respect.
Right.
And it was beautiful. Yeah. I fell asleep. I just religious text can't do anything.
What we're hitting on is the danger factor of the selling factor, the marketable factor of telling faith-based stories because it's hard to make them dynamic and stick to the source material.
Yeah, right. I think you have to be more devout in order to be engaged with it, and I don't know that any of us are those people. So.
I mean, from a certain point of view, you know, the book that's called Grant Morrison's 18 Days is a faith-based text because it's all drawn from Hindu mythology, and right. This is part of the Hindu belief structure, you know, of one branch of Hinduism. So, you know, this is a reinscription of that belief system as well, you know, mm-hmm. If you look at it that way. You know, I'm reading the book. I'll probably read it to the bitter end. Grant Morrison doesn't have a lot to do with it anymore other than have his name on the cover. And it is getting, it's not that exciting a book, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering if that's one of the reasons why.
You have to have a scorecard.
Yeah. What is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, the stuff that has threads in it or the stuff that's blasphemous is good for me. So if that's the next part, I've got the stuff.
Well, speaking of, was there not a rumor 10 years ago that Frank Miller's next project was going to be Jesus Christ?
No, it's not. I
vaguely remember that.
That was the next project he was going to be doing, and I really kind of wonder. I was curious. I'm curious the way, you know, it's hard to look away from a car crash,
right?
You know,
right.
But I don't know. I'm wondering if that's ever that will ever see the light of day, and what the heck he was planning to do with that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It steps above and beyond white privileged Jesus. You know, like. So
sure.
That's just hot mess. I don't know.
So before we get to blasphemous, there's a midline, I feel. And are you guys familiar with like the Chick Tracks? Have you ever seen those?
Oh, yeah.
Those are like those really uber religious mini comics that are kind of scary, you know, about like your soul, you're going to hell. Mm-hmm. And
if you're gay, you will burn in hell.
Yeah. And you find people pass them out at bus stops and they're like little mini info packets. So that's, you know, on that side of bad religious representation, but they were serious when they made them.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, they become kitsch.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very, very popular.
Like some people collect them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
My favorite thing, though, is there's a couple different versions of those out now, and somebody did them according to the old gods of the Necronomicon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's just like, you're not going to save your soul. Have fun with that and kill your family right now because madness and everything will engulf them. And then there's like another webcomic that did the same thing, but they kind of did it with barbarians, and so it's on the plus side.
I do I do remember why I put this topic in the show sheet.
Why did you do this to us, Ben?
Well, because it's because of Daredevil. It's because of Matt Murdock's religion. Oh.
Absolutely.
To him.
Yeah. Yes.
And I did, when I was watching when I was watching the show on TV, because I'd never read the comic, and I felt that was surprising, because you don't often see devout characters in pop culture these days.
Yeah. That's an interesting like sub point to this, because Daredevil is a really good character to bring up for that. Can you recall too many? Because, I mean, Ben Grimm and his Jewish heritage has been a
factor. I felt like that was glossed over so much.
Yeah,
I mean,
recently, or I say recently, like a few years ago, they kind of did something where he finally had his bar mitzvah or something like that.
Interesting.
And I thought that was really, really good. And like Moon Knight and Shadow Cat, they talk about their heritage as well.
Miss Marvel.
Miss Marvel is a big
Muslim.
One. Yeah, so yeah. That's, and her faith and
right.
How.
And it plays into the car. Yeah, in the
yeah,
comic,
so
yeah.
That's, I love that.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, that's, to me, for me, that's what makes that comic book really super interesting.
Yeah.
Because I learn things from that character. Mm-hmm. I learn things about that culture. I trust that what I'm learning is genuine.
Mm-hmm. The writer being Muslim, she
precisely
has an experience
yeah.
with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so do you recall what the Daredevil storylines, was that from the Frank Miller era that got it seeded into, you know, when he discovered that his mother who had abandoned him was actually a nun, had become a nun and that sort of thing?
I thought it was, but I
or am I
so long since I've read okay, any of those. Right. So,
because I'm looking at some of them on the wall up there.
Ben was taken aback by that.
Yeah. I didn't know his mom became a nun.
I think that was a story. I think
no, that sounds
was a story.
About right.
If there's any Daredevil fans out there, please correct me if I'm wrong.
Email us at perfectbombpodcast@gmail.com.
So now we're talking about blasphemy.
Let's move on to blasphemy.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Nicole, do you want to start this off?
One of my favorite blasphemous ones is Chronicles of Wormwood by Garth Ennis.
Okay.
And that's where God goes insane because of all that he's created and he can't handle it. And wacky things ensue.
Well, and the Antichrist, the main character is
the
Antichrist.
He's
the
Antichrist, and he's got a talking rabbit friend, and he hangs out with Jesus, and who's it's been a while now since I've read it. Was he a black homeless man?
Jesus was
yeah. a black homeless man, very sweet. And that one's really fun. I love that one. Mm-hmm. And Preacher's got some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Deals with
yeah,
religion.
Yeah,
I mean, all
yeah.
over the place in that.
I will always say I very much enjoyed Battle Pope by
yes.
Robert Kirkman. It's exactly what it sounds like. Basically,
and it sounds awesome.
Yeah, because basically it was the rapture happened and only like two people could go to heaven because we all sucked. And it was like Ned Flanders and some guy in a coma. And so the gates of hell open up, but it turns out that we're so bad ourselves that we actually fight hell to a standstill and we create a peace with hell and we start like having lives with demons. And so God felt kind of bad about just leaving us alone. So he decided like, well, I'm going to get the Pope, who, you know, totally couldn't come up here with you all because he was an alcoholic womanizer. And I'm going to have him be trained by Bruce Lee and then give him like a Rambo body and go, he'll fight demons. And then my son Jesus will be his sidekick. And it got worse from there. And by worse, I mean better, but then worse.
Worst,
yeah.
Yeah.
The worst.
There's another one that's not necessarily blasphemous, but it's an Avatar book, I believe. It's called Nancy in Hell. And it's where the slasher girl out of the movies, the promiscuous one, she gets killed and she goes to hell. And she finds Lucifer. And Lucifer is this blonde-haired, yeah, blue-eyed angel. And all he does is sob. And he's just this, like, pathetic wimp. And she's just like, okay, come on, let's go do stuff, I guess. And that went, like, two series. And it was really funny. Because it was just like, you know, the girl who's always over-sexualized actually ends up winning the day and actually isn't stupid like everyone
right.
thinks she is. So it was witty and it was fun. And it was instead of dealing with God and Jesus, it was dealing with Satan, basically. But he was a pathetic little emo
cool.
boy.
Well, let's not forget the Sandman spinoff series in Vertigo, Lucifer.
Right.
Who wrote that? Was it?
Mike Carey?
Yeah.
Michael Carey.
Mike Carey.
I really enjoyed that series a lot, which is what inspired the TV series that started on Fox last night. And I actually read a review of the show, and they were quite positive about it, which surprises me.
And I heard it was a positive review. Then I heard a really negative review.
Okay,
so it seems
well,
50-50.
I'll get around to
can't
it.
Can't please
but
everybody.
What I remember from the Lucifer series, and this is the Lucifer from the Sandman Season of the Mist storyline, where he abdicates the throne of hell and turns it over to Morpheus, and then all hell ensues. And he opens a nightclub in L.A. And then sets about doing his own thing. And one of the things that he did was create his own world. But he said there's only one rule. You shall worship no one. And all the creatures he creates that dwell on this planet can't exist that way. no creation can exist that way, he finds. And he's terribly disappointed in his creations and winds up, I think he winds up destroying them because they cannot live independently without a higher being to believe in. Mm. So that was really... really incredible story.
There's a more recent one that is still out in single issues called The Goddamned by Jason Aaron, and that's dealing with biblical stories of what Cain. Happens with Cain before the flood. So that one's really interesting. That actually makes me care about biblical stories. Mm.
There was also that... because there was that movie Noah that came out that Aronofsky did, and that's based off of a comic. But I never, I didn't sit down and read it, and I thought the comic
was. I
sat
down to watch the film, so
I did.
Oh, you did?
It was a mess,
How do you spell that for the poll quote on the poster?
Just M's and S's in there is what I'm gathering.
Anyway,
squiggly lines.
Yeah. You did or did not read the comic?
I did not read the comic. So, but that is out there. It looks sci-fi every time I look to it, so I always put it in the sci-fi section.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I should actually open that at some point.
One of these days.
Yeah, all right. I got so many things to read.
Yeah.
Well, you have a whole bookstore of things to read.
Yes, exactly. Word.
I do.
All right. So let's move on to another weird topic for today. And I think it's heart-wrenching comics. What are comics that have given you an extreme emotional reaction? Now, I put this in the show notes, and I'll tell you why. I put this in because... I followed a YouTube rabbit hole of these, I think it was like lottery commercials from Thailand, and they are gut-wrenching, and you know, it's but in a good way. Like, you will watch this minute and a half commercial and just be sobbing at the end.
But they're ultimately to get you to buy lottery tickets, yeah.
I think it's not solely for lottery, but which benefits the public good, you know. It's for public services and all that. But it's also for other like government services. Mm. Or like insurance companies. I think insurance companies are another big one that have jumped on to this like bandwagon of just producing the saddest commercials ever. So I was wondering, are there any comics you've read where you've just bawled your eyes out?
Yeah. Recently for me, there was a couple too, but... the second issue of the relaunch of Howard the Duck by Chip Zdarsky actually hit me right with the feels.
Really?
But... guaranteed, if you have a comic with a dog in it, there's a rule. God. There's a rule in comics. No,
I want to know where this is going.
No, there can be no happy dog comics. Cats have happy comics, but dog comics, like there's the story of Laika, the little Russian dog that was sent into space to die, and you know, spoiler. The dog died. But the whole story was from like the dog's point of view, and it's like, oh god. And then there's the Beast of Burden series from Dark Horse, which is beautiful, but it has these really, really, really dark moments, which then are nicely balanced by Hellboy carrying a talking pug, you know, stuff like that. There was another one called. Oh, it was a Japanese one.
Stargazing Dog.
Stargazing Dog.
Yeah.
Oh,
that
my God.
One is so sad.
I can't. That,
oh,
my God. I couldn't function after that one. Oh. So if you ever see a dog in a comic, just turn away.
We Three.
Yeah, Grant Morrison's We Three is a very sad one.
I still can't fully read that one. I've skimmed it.
Yeah.
That's about as far as
I get.
That's
a tough one.
Mother Come Home by Paul...
Yes. Hornschmeyer.
Hornschmeyer.
That's one
that
of my
one
favorite comics.
I think might have actually made me cry.
Yeah, actually cry.
It's sad, but it's also beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a story about a father and a son, and the mother had passed away due to cancer, and the whole story was about loss and coping, and the father couldn't, and he disappeared from the kid's life, and then the kid just... had to deal with stuff, and he kind of escaped into a fantasy world. Mm-hmm. That one was just, it was full of a lot of real personal moments that the creator put in there, and some very, very well translated moments of emotion.
It's well done. I mean, when it hits you that hard, you know, it's accomplished it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
I think the one that kicked me, I'm going to go back to Sandman again. It was, I can't remember the issue or the, but it was one of the standalone stories that dealt with Element Girl. And she was this sort of third string superhero in the DC universe who was like Metamorpho, right, but had the same powers, you know, granted her by some Egyptian god. In fact, I think she spoke to the Egyptian god, but she's no longer human. She's basically like a living cinder block. And she sits alone in her apartment and she chain smokes, but she can't feel anything. She lives on the government dole because she was a government agent. And her only interaction with other people is when she calls the office. There's one like account rep or something at the CIA office in accounting that she's struck up a relationship with over the phone, first name basis. And she's literally dying of loneliness. She can't feel anything. She can't touch anybody. She tries to go out and interact with people, but she can't hold her form longer than a couple of minutes. And, you know, the only interaction she has of any length in the story is when Death shows up to take her away. And I've always loved the Death character in the Sandman stories because that depiction of Death is so personable and practical and cute. You know, Death is not, she's this cute little gothy girl. She's not, it's not this, you know, skeletal cloak figure. And that one, I've reread it several times and it always kicks me because I have such incredible sympathy for this, the Element Girl character. I love that story. It's very bittersweet and it works.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, heart-wrenching comics. They surprise us sometimes. They come, yeah. they hit us. All right. Changing gears pretty drastically.
Completely.
Completely. Doing a complete 180. Apparently, Red Sonja, Vampirella, and Deja Thoris are being relaunched at Dynamite with new demographics in mind. Does anybody care? Yes, no?
No, I feel nothing.
I feel nothing.
Okay, moving on. Let's go.
I'd like to mention the owner of the store mentioned something perfect to me of like, so older characters like that, especially more pulpy characters, the current market is just not friendly to them because the cycles of nostalgia, like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers just came out last week, and it's a huge seller because everybody that grew up with that in the 90s now have jobs. And in, you know, there, when Transformers came in the early 2000s, everybody from the 80s got their jobs. So the thing is, everybody who grew up with Vampirella or Deja Thoris from Warlord of Mars, that cycle's not going to work right now. So, yeah. But you shouldn't retire the characters. So maybe you should release them on a quarterly basis in a graphic novel. Like, they're still here, but like redressing them for modern era is kind of like, sometimes you got to let it go.
And I've actually heard good things about Gail Simone's Red Sonja and that there's a Red Sonja Conan one or something like that. I just don't care. I feel like if you're going to be a good writer and want to write these characters, just make another character and put pants on her instead of having her in a chain mail bikini, whatever.
Well, like Vampirella.
That's so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Vampirella.
Yeah, chafes.
Try and sum up Vampirella. Like, she comes from the planet Draculon.
You're right.
And
I tried to read some old Warren Vampirellas years ago, and I just could not make it through the collection.
There's some beautiful art in some of those. But
I feel like you get that kind of like classic style art and maybe make a sort of fresh, sort of retro, like try to make it appeal to both.
Sure.
I don't know. But like, that stuff is still like, the people want the TNA. The people who are looking for that.
Right.
And the new demographic, there's just not enough momentum to bring them in. And
yeah, you know, that's what those characters are established as TNA characters.
Yeah.
And who you can think you're going to be reaching now, that's, I think Chris probably hit on that. But
yeah.
And what are you going to tell us that's new about these characters?
Oh, God, I looked up Red Sonja for this thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
What's
that
it say?
Goes all over weird places. Like, so one of her stories, one of her origin stories was that she, like, her whole village was, like pillaged and she was raped and then like some goddess comes and like gives her superpower kind of things and then she goes and seeks vengeance and then like Gail Simone rewrote it where she basically took out all the horrible things and the spiritual things and just made her like go kick butt, you know? So it's just like this whole spectrum of like, what? To like, oh yeah, she's just a girl. She's just got red hair and she's going to go do things. And then there's another time where she was a queen and then like some of the spiritual stuff played into her having to be like celibate. So like she'd fight all these wars and then there'd be like scenes where people were making love somewhere and she was like, I wish I could do that, but my promise is to blah, blah, blah. And it was just like, what?
Yeah. Wasn't she like Brunhilde from the Ring cycle was like, and she, unless she is conquered by a man, she will never.
Well, right. There was something like that.
Right. And I so, can't remember. I don't know if I've ever read the actual Robert E. Howard story that she was featured in.
Oh, she was a completely different character.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. They changed her for the comics completely.
That goes back to Marvel, though.
Yeah.
Right?
She was like a pirate or something in the original stuff.
Okay.
Or something else completely. But the funny thing for me about all this is just like, how are you going to redesign this character? Pants. All I could think of is that there was a quick cartoon joke thing on Cartoon Central where they reanimated the Super Friends and the Legion of Doom, and Brainiac was just like, I just want pants, a decent pair of pants. And Solomon Grundy's like, Solomon Grundy wants pants too. So Vampirella and Deja Thoris, they just want pants.
They just want pants, man. Vampirella's pretty cold and she's got to wear all that tape to keep her costume on, you know.
I do believe there was an HBO or Showtime Vampirella series,
maybe,
if I remember correctly, back in the 90s.
I probably tried to black it out.
I don't know. I almost feel like these characters could come back and actually be good stories with what they are, but like, there's just no way that Dynamite's going to do it.
Well, my take is that they've tried so many times. I mean, especially with like Red Sonja.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She just relaunched twice.
We don't care, but we do, but we don't, but we do.
But we don't, but we do. Okay.
All right. Lesson from what I'm taking away from this is pants. And let's
don't
move
forget
on to book
shirts.
Report.
Woo!
No service.
Are we moving stuff around?
We're moving on to book report.
Okay.
So how about Nicole? What have you read this week?
I actually just played catch up on Saga and Lumberjanes.
Okay.
And since I've already kind of reviewed those and or everyone's already read them anyway, I just want to say that they're awesome and they keep getting better and everyone should read these books.
Okay.
So I kind of did a double. I started reading Canon the Last Padawan, but I'm not that far in that I feel like I can give a good review.
Okay.
However, I'm very excited about it.
Well, I just want to say that I love the Disney Star Wars Rebels series, so I'm very fond of it.
I'm very much looking forward to finishing the first trade of that.
Do you like the art so far?
I like the art. I like the start of it, the momentum, the tone, all of that's working. So
cool.
But I just don't feel like I've read enough to
give
a full review.
All right, that's fair. Okay, and I'm going to go next.
Uh-oh.
Because I actually read something today. I read Victory City, number one, from IDW, from Carmack and Nappy. And I wanted to, because I got here to the store a bit early when we were to record today, so I just picked up a random comic. And the only reason I this caught my eye is because the artwork on the front, just out of the corner of my eye, looked like George W. Bush in a trench coat.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what's that? Oh,
and I thought he looked like John Constantine.
Yeah,
so.
He actually looks like a mesh between
Bush.
Constantine.
Private Dick.
And they spell victory with an IAE, so it's clever. So it's basically like the one good cop story. It's like a sea of corruption in the police force. How can you know how are the cops and the robbers different? But the main character is this police officer. And he's trying to prove to not clean up the city, but just be true to himself and be a good cop. He eventually like ends up arresting his own partner when his partner goes in to take a bribe. So as far as the stories, and it teases you with a pretty brutal murder in the beginning, but as far as the story is concerned, nothing really grabbed me. It was basically, I mean, it's the story we've all seen. Like, there's corrupt cops and the one good cop is trying to make a difference, but of course it being issue one, there's no real conclusion. The last page is the good cop like holding up a bad guy. But I did enjoy reading it. Actually, it's this gritty art style. It looks like it was drawn like with a fountain pen and charcoal pen, just like very quickly. And it actually kind of works for me because it is like a gritty city. It's a dirty city. And the cop, the good guy, who's, I hope I can run across his name here and before I forget it, or because I'm forgetting it, is the font and the color of his text is different than everybody else's. Mm. So you know when he's speaking or when he has a like a thought bubble. It looks like his the narration is a slightly lighter shade of his text, but it's still the font is different. I appreciate that because it helps inform how I'm reading the comic, because in reading the text bubbles with different fonts, I can hear different voices in my head. It's kind of weird. So, yeah, and it's different pages have different like color schemes when depending on where he is in the story. It's so visually, I actually appreciate this. It's visually appealing to me, but the story didn't really strike me. Story by Keith Carmack, art Vincent Nepi. Yeah,
you liked the storytelling, but you didn't care too much for the story.
Yeah, that's a good way to sum it up.
Cool.
All right. So, yeah, Victory City, number one. I actually found a number one from IDW. So, Chris, what about you?
You know who else might want pants?
Cole, put your pants back.
Oh, jeez.
So I read Rowdy Roddy Piper, Monster Killer. And this was approved by Rowdy Roddy Piper, the wrestler, before he passed away at the end of 2015. And basically, they reinvent Roddy Piper as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and he wears a kilt.
Is he a rogue demon slayer?
Basically, kind of. Yeah. And so this is the thing. He fights them with his bagpipes. Demons can't stand the sound of the bagpipes. Imagine that. Like, he goes to the top of a hill out of a city and just plays him, and all the demons in the city come out to fight him. And then he kills him with his shillelagh. And then... Also, this is the part I love absolutely.
Was his sporin set to stun?
Oh, this is what I love the most, is that he is the one thing preventing all of evil from controlling the world. He is the one thing. His bloodline is, but there's like just him and like his estranged son in this story.
Until a Hulk Hogan shows up.
Yeah.
He's the one true.
Oh no, Hulk Hogan turned to the dark side a while ago. So this is published by GH Comics and Grindhouse Comics. They're kind of newish. I looked at the ads in the back. They don't look great. Crawdaddy and Bikini SWAT.
Come on, those sound amazing. Yeah. But,
so the interesting thing is there's a few writers here. There's story contributors, but the script is by Ian Eddington, who is a very established writer in the industry. And then there's text proofing. So like, there's like five people that had to write the story. It's not that involved of a story. But the pencils are by Cliff Richards, who does a lot of DC stuff these days. And he's very much like Mike Diodato at Marvel. Mm-hmm. A little cleaner. I actually like him more. He does less digital manipulation in here. And basically, Roddy Piper fights demons and makes witty one-liners and plays the bagpipes. His best friend is like a werewolf, but the werewolf is like... there's different breeds of werewolves, and this one sheds a lot. And then his son is like a MMA fighter, and like the monsters are coming to kill the son to break the bloodline. The demon is all satan-y looking, and he's wearing a corporate uniform. Like da, da, da,
it
da.
Is very Buffy angel-y.
It's very Buffy angel-y. It's tongue in cheek. It knows what it is. It's a little overpriced. It's $12.99, but it's got a painted cover by Joe Jusco, which is like, oh, you paid for that.
Yeah.
It's okay. It was fun, and I mean, he beats him to death with his shillelagh. You know, that's great.
Is it? It's a perfect bound book.
Yeah, it's so like a little mini graphic novel.
Oh, is it? Is it an ongoing series?
No,
or is
it's just a one shot, a standalone. And so, yeah, I mean, if you like wrestling stuff, and especially it's tongue in cheek, it's fun. I'm not going to say it's good, but it's fun.
So, all right, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Monster Killer. I remember I only saw wrestling when it preempted Saturday Night Live when I was a kid growing up, like every 2 months or whatever. Cole Hornaday, what did you read this week, sir?
Well, I read Scarlet Witch number one by James Robinson and Vanessa Del Rey, and I really enjoyed it. I've always been curious of when or how they were ever going to recoup Scarlet Witch as a character following what House of M. I haven't really been paying much attention, but you know, she kind of destroyed the world and rewrote the world. And
I think they blamed Dr. Doom after that.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
That's not fair.
Yeah, I know, right?
But you know,
guy can't catch a break.
But I've also always been, I've been waiting, and I'm sure Chris and many other readers have been waiting long and hard for James Robinson to recoup. Because James Robinson used to be this stellar writer in my eyes. I mean, he back in the 90s, he wrote one of my favorite series, which was Starman, which I before we started recording, I mentioned to Chris, you know, I'm actually kind of afraid to go back and reread them because I remember them being so terribly good, and I, you know, don't want to have... You know,
they hold
my
up.
Opinion be changed.
I don't think you have to worry. Yeah. They're very melodramatic, but they work for what it is.
Okay.
But he had a rough patch, like, in life. And
yeah.
He actually did an Airboy comic that was about that.
Well, yeah, the Airboy comic, that's truly inspired and really fascinates me because that's just so off the hook.
Right, yeah.
But back to Scarlet Witch. Yeah. It's Vanessa Del Rey is a really interesting illustrator, and as I was thumbing through this, it dawned on me that Scarlet Witch has always been a rather sexualized character in her depiction, but in this comic book, she's very practically dressed. She had this really cool tiara. She's wearing pants, but she also is her familiar or her confidant is the ghost of Agatha Harkness, who she killed. Right in the House of M story,
at some point,
I think she was responsible for killing.
Yeah,
and Agatha Harkness has always been like this peripheral or supporting character in the Marvel universe, going back to the early days of the Fantastic Four and the Knights of Wondergore and all that kind of good stuff. And Robinson has this thing about ghost characters, supporting characters, and one of my favorite aspects of the Starman story was how Jack Knight would once a year have sort of this. Summit meeting with the ghost of his dead brother, who was his predecessor as Starman. And those are my favorite stories because the ghost always spoke the truth to him.
Right.
And that's one of those things that Robinson does well, is those kind of characters. So I'm looking forward to reading some more of this book.
Cool. All right. Scarlet Witch. Did I get that right? Yay,
correct.
Scarlet Witch number one. Okay, so that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, of course, we play quiz time. Nicole, it's your turn. Lay it on us.
What you got, baby?
So I almost tortured y'all and made a dynamite quiz.
Oh.
And no. I almost died.
Couldn't make it through it.
I couldn't do it. So I got inspired by redheads because Red Sonja. So this is...
Right. And you're a ginger.
Name that red hot ginger.
Sorry, I
this
killed
is our
it.
Game show.
Did I ruin it for you? I'm sorry.
So I'm gonna say a little spiel about him, and then you just name the guy or the girl.
Okay,
excellent.
Okay?
All right. So this guy, living in a quiet suburban town, seems to have no limit on the ladies to date. Specifically, though, he has been dating two special ladies: a blonde and a brunette. Off and on since your grandparents were in the war. Name that red hot ginger.
Archie Andrews.
Very good. Full name and everything. That's mm-hmm. All right, so this guy rivals... This is going to happen a lot. This guy rivals Bruce Wayne, though doesn't share the universe, on the amount of lady friends he has. There's a lot of players in this first one. He's a lawyer by day and crime-fighting ninja by night. Name that red-hot ginger.
Daredevil.
Yes. Or, also known as...
Matt Murdock.
That is correct.
We said that in stereo.
So, this next question, I just have to fair warn, is a little heated because I don't like her very much.
Okay.
So, this lady has harnessed a force that has been very devastating, but has since been forgiven for such devastation. She also used her telepathic powers. She saw fit to out another member of her team. Who is that?
Jean Grey.
Yeah, I don't like her. Okay.
It's worth... No, I'm not going to interrupt. Go, go, go.
Because I was going to be like, she's the young version of the little version.
Not even that. No, but yeah, no, moving on.
Okay. So this lady left her military career due to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and went on to become a caped vigilante. Her costume was inspired by one of the most famous. Name that red hot ginger.
Batwoman Kate Kane.
Yes, thank you. All right, and last one, but certainly not least. This guy does a lot of things in space and once got punched by Batman. He's a jerk, but I love him. Name that red hot ginger.
Guy Gardner.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Nicole. And that's quiz time. And that's our show.
Good job.
Thank you.
The Perfect Bound Podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Nicole and Ben do at thepaneljumper.com. The Perfect Bound Podcast is also brought to you by The Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. You can subscribe to The Perfect Bound Podcast at perfectboundpodcast.com, or you can email us at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Woo-woo!